What are her parents called, Peter?
Pelling, George. He's a retired post office official.
Yes, of course, it's all here. Cockfosters, Arcady Mansions. Arcady? Good Lord.
Shall I have someone visit them?
No, I think I shall go myself.
Huh?
I shouldn't, really, but I need to be sure. I need to get near the girl. As Connie says, she is a potential lever.
All right, George. What would you like for cover?
Bullion Universal Security Advisors, I think.
I'll give you a nice green official card as Mr. G. Oates.
Fine. I'll ring them and fix an appointment. And, Peter?
Yes, George?
Pelling is likely to phone and confirm, so make quite sure the switchboard are clear and take it yourself.
Right.
I'll let you know when I'm off. How could he mention? Will it live up to its name, I wonder?
Mr. Oates? Meet Nunk.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pelling.
Yes. Well, just who are you, precisely? Are you Secret Service, or aren't you?
His card, Your Worship. Green in hue.
Oh? We're exchanging cards, are we? I'll need one, too. Slip down to Smith's desk and have some printed.
Do sit down, Mr. Oates. Do you like tea?
He doesn't need tea. He's not a guest. I didn't ask him. Bullion Universal Security Advisors. My Aunt Fanny. I'll stay the week. Move in, if you like. Have her bed.
He wants to talk about Lizzie, darling. Now be a father for a change.
Fat lot of good her better do, you mind?
Oh, for those kind words. Of course you will have some tea.
Thank you.
That's Lizzie's photograph.
Ah.
She's very beautiful, you see.
Look as long as you like, Oates.
Mr. Pelling, sir, your daughter is being considered for an important appointment with a major overseas corporation. She'll be specialising in air transport, and her work will give her advanced knowledge of large gold shipments. It carries an extremely high remuneration. My organisation's been asked to approach you in confidence about your daughter's background.
Set. Where's that tea? It's high time Lizzie was rewarded, and I'm frankly displeased that it hasn't occurred before now, seeing what they owe her. Set. Where's that card?
It's on the table. They have a head office in South Moulton Street.
Mm. Any inquiries, telephone, blah, blah, blah. It's ringing.
There. The tea.
Bullion Universal.
Oh, give me the managing director. Has he got a name?
Mr. Forbes Lyle.
Yeah, well, you tell Mr. Forbes Lyle that Mr. Humphrey Pelling desires a personal word with him, now.
We haven't heard of her for a year.
Your daughter?
Tea for two, and tea for three, you leave for you, and you for her.
She's mad enough.
You don't write to her at all?
She doesn't want it.
Forbes Lyle here. What's your problem, Mr. Pelling?
It's this. Of a man calling himself Oates, sitting in front of me. Short, fat, and worried. What do you want me to do with him?
Tell him what he wants to know. He's not snooping around for nothing, you know. Stuff on your daughter is most important. Your cooperation will be a great help.
I see. Oh, thanks. I'll do my best.
Good man. Cheerio.
Good chap, my managing director, you know. On the ball.
I'm still not sure he's not Secret Service, Seth. He may not be glamour, but that could be deliberate.
I have some forms. Perhaps we could...
Let's have a look. Give him some more tea. He's wolfed that lot already.
Yes, sir. Tea for the wolf.
Oh, that's excellent, Mr. Pelling, sir. Now, could you tell me of any experience she's had in the transportation industry?
Right. Put down... Working for the British Secret Service in a high capacity. Undercover. There. It's out now. No daughter of mine's going to be an unsung heroine. She'll get the George Medal before she's done, you mark my words.
Balls. That was just one of her stories, you know that.
We were talking of experience in the transportation industry.
Her first commercial experience came in... How do you pronounce it?
Vientiane, capital of Laos.
A distilling company.
She was selling kegs of unbranded whiskey to American layabouts. Then her lover went and filched the money.
Balderdash. The woman's insane. Disregard her.
She was living with a pilot. Tiny, she called him. Tiny Ricardo. He was gorgeous. But the war had turned him inside out. Well, of course it would, wouldn't it? Same with our boys, wasn't it? Missions, day after day. Scramble!
She's blind mad. Barking. Mad as a newt.
Tiny Ricardo. A lamb. He died, you know. Lizzie was heartbroken.
She wasn't living with anyone, you anthropoid ape. It was a put-up, the whole thing. She was working for the British Secret Service. The name of a commanding officer in the British Secret Service was Melon. Like the fruit, but twice as many L's. Take that down, Oates. Melon.
He's bananas.
With Melon, she fought against drug dealers, Chinese, homosexuals, every single element sworn to the subversion of our island nation.
Now, ask me where Lizzie gets it from.
It is true. She went to Hong Kong for Melon, to investigate drugs and bullion. She could have gone to prison.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pelling.
She works for Melon, and she loves her father. Finish.
You've been very kind. All of this I'll treat in absolute confidence. Please don't worry. I'll see myself out.
See yourself how you like.
I'll see you off the premises. This way, Mr. Oates. He won't leave her alone. Never could. He tried, but he never could. She's beautiful, you see.
Yes, of course.
Probably you understand. She's got a dear sweet Chinaman. She went to him to save Ricardo, and Benji fell in love with him. He calls her Lisa. Funny, really, we don't like Germans.
I understand she prefers the name Worth rather than Worthington.
Cutting that boring schoolmaster husband down to size, I should think.
When you say she did it to save Ricardo, you mean, of course, that,
She bought Ricardo his life, darling, with the only currency she has. She did him proud, then left him. What the hell, he was a slug. My little Lizzie went behind the hedge with half of Asia before she found her Drake. But she found him.
Drake is the,
Chinaman, dear. Co, or woe, or Dr. No, for all I know. Now, I think you'd better go, dear. You give me the galloping creeps, to be honest. I can't do with trustworthy faces round me.
Good day to you there, Mrs. Pelling.
And come not again to Arcady, Mr. Oates.
So, the girl's for real, George.
Oh, yes, I'm sure she is.
Whom does she take after?
My dear Peter, you can't imagine. She is rather like a dame in pantomime. Mr. Pelling, late of the Royal Mail, is small and fierce. Ugly, I'd say. Still, does happen.
Melon in Vientiane, was that...
Oh, yes, Sam Collins. She seems to have thought a lot of him. Sam found her a total disaster, he tells me. And by the way, Peter, Sam will be joining us next week.
Here at the circus?
For the present, yes. See that he gets a nice office. He'll be very self-sufficient.
I have noticed, George.
Your barking on the phone to Pelling was most impressive. It smoothed things a lot, thank you. Is Connie about?
No, George. She's gone with Dr. Salis to the seaside. Worthing, where the missionary Hibbert and his daughter live.
What's their cover, Peter?
They're vetting Drake Coe before he gets put up for a knighthood. That Cabinet Honours Committee thing.
Sir Drake Coe. That's one thing I'd not thought of, I will say. Sir Drake. Well, I'll be blowed. Hey, Doris?
Are you? Drake was ambitious, Dad.
Tell me again about the early Shanghai days, Mr. Hibbert.
There was Daisy Fong, Daisy and her bell, doing God's work. Even if she did fall later, she'd go down the streets ringing the daylights out of that bell. Down the docks or the nightclub areas, the Rue de Jaff. That was the worst spot, where the houses of sin were. But it was down on the docks that Daisy and her bell found the coves. They'd come up from Swatow, the two of them. When was that? 1936, I suppose. Young Drake was 10 or 11, and his brother Nelson was 8. Mind you, They hadn't names then. They were Chiu Chow, boat people. Mother dead. Killed by guns, they said. It was your mother's idea, you know, Doris. Their names. She always wanted boys.
So she used to tell me.
I told them. You'll be Drake, I said. And you'll be Nelson, because you're both brave sailors. How's that? Oh, they loved my wife, you know. They used to stroke her hair. They'd never seen blonde hair before.
Mr. Hibbert, we have no note of a brother till now. He was younger, you say?
No note of Nelson. Why, Drake loved him. Nelson was his whole life. Drake would do anything for him.
I'm afraid we are to blame, Mr. Hibbert. There's a blank on the form against brothers and sisters.
They were chalk and cheese. I never saw two brothers so different. Nor so faithful, and that's a fact. Nelson was a rebel from the day he was born. Drake, though, was a persuader. A persuader.
He was sly, was Drake.
Nelson, he'd a real quarrel with God from the start. Then the Japs came and they shut us up. Killed your mother. We got away, you know, and the mission closed. And Daisy Fong, with her handbell, led the children to Chungking.
He can't go on too long. He gets gaga.
Oh, yes, I can, Doris. I've had my share of life. Now I can do what I like.
But you went back to Shanghai, eh? After the Japanese were defeated. And you found the Kos again, eh?
They'd forgotten their English, so I had to give them lessons again. Drake wept when he heard my wife was dead. But Nelson, now, he didn't cry or pray. She was now the enemy. We all were.
We being precisely, Mr. Hibbert?
Capitalists, missionaries, all of us carpetbaggers who were there for Nelson's soul or his labor or his silver and those like him. Exploiters. That's how he saw us. Right, too, in a way. You see, Nelson learned about communism in Chungking, while Drake, being older, was drafted into Chiang's army.
So you stayed in Shanghai until the communist takeover in 49. You kept an eye on the Kos, did you?
Drake was adamant that Nelson went to school, and he did it. Drake was 19 by then and a real fixer.
He was a crook. He joined a gang and stole when he wasn't pawing me.
Nelson would have a go at me on politics. My, he'd some ideas. Nothing we could have taught him.
What was his discipline at this time?
Why, the Communist Party, naturally.
What was he studying, Mr. Hibbert, and where?
Shipbuilding, roads, railways, factories. His passion was engineering. He graduated from Shanghai in 1951, and that meant that Drake could come out, as he'd always planned.
And after Nelson graduated, what became of him, do you know?
He went to Russia in 53, I think it was, to Leningrad University. And he stayed there until the late 50s.
And after Leningrad, what did they do to him then?
He came back to Shanghai. A shipbuilder. Russian taught. Oh, how he loved those Russians. Promoted. An important man. But admiring Russia. How long was that fashionable in Mao's new wonderland? Doris, do you get me a shawl?
You're wearing it.
So he rose in the hierarchy. What comes next, Mr. Hibbert?
He's dead, young man. He's dead.
Dead?
I think we have taxed Mr. Hibbert quite enough.
How did Nelson die, Mr. Hibbert? When did he die?
He's very tired, you know, very old. I can tell you how we heard. Drake was in England with his henchman, too. It was April of 1967. He drove down to see us with Chew. He brought me a platinum cigarette lighter and £1,000 in cash for Dad's church. Then he took me in a corner and asked me to come to Hong Kong and be his mistress. Bloody sauce. Dad asked him, of course, how's Nelson? He just said, dead. As if Nelson were a dog. Then he said, I have no brother. Nelson is dead.
I prayed for Nelson, and I pray for him still. I do not believe the light of God's love can be put out forever, not by politics, nor by the sword. And now he's dead. I pray for his soul.
Politics and the sword, you said. So it was a violent death, was it, Mr. Hibbert? Did Drake tell you that?
You've been very kind, Miss Hibbert. Really, we've all we could possibly need and more. And now, away
he... And the year after, he lost his son, Nelson, too. He'll be a lonely man, will Drake. Pray for my little son, Nelson, he wrote me.
Yes, but did he ever ask you to pray for his brother, Nelson?
No. No, he didn't.
I wonder why not. Perhaps he wasn't really dead. There are more ways than one of dying in China, aren't there? And not all of them are fatal. Disgraced, is that a better expression?
I don't know, Mr. Whatever your name was. Doris, let her go.
Yes, of course, and thank you so much, Mr. Hibbert.
I hope your driver hasn't got too cold out there.
The brother story is most interesting, Mr. Hibbert.
No, I need some peace. They're to go, Doris.
They're on their way, Dad.
Just before we go, Miss Hibbert, we have a reference to a Lisa in Mr. Coe's life. Does the name mean anything to you?
Lisa was my mum's name. She was German Lutheran. The swine stole that too, did he?
I think Dr. Salis is upturning, if that's the right expression, every corner of the Oriental world's records from Cambridge to Tokyo.
And there's Rome and Munich, Peter. Don't forget them.
The tracking down of Nelson Coe will be written on the doc's heart. He's convinced he's alive, you know, George.
Yes, well, there's good reason. Connie's of the same opinion.
Find Nelson alive, George, and where does it get us?
Only that there will still be a link, in all probability.
A link? Come in. Oh, it's you, Molly. Come and sit down and brighten our lives.
Thank you, Peter. Good afternoon, Mr. Smiley.
Good afternoon, Miss Meekin. Well, I'll leave you to Peter.
Oh, actually, sir, I have a message for you.
From the cousins, I take it?
Yes, I've just come from the Annex. They want to meet with you at the Annex as soon as possible.
They want what?
Well, they mean they want to meet you, but they use the preposition.
Do you know what about?
Someone called Tiny Ricardo, Ed told me to say.
Did he? Good God. Is this Martello's invitation?
Oh, yes. Will you please ring him, as of yesterday, really?
Well, Peter, are we being trusted again?
Either that or they want something pretty badly.
Do you appreciate, Molly, that this is the first time the hand of friendship has been extended from Grosvenor Square since Bill Hayden was found out?
I had thought so, sir. Will you phone Marty?
Yes, of course. So we're no longer on the arm's length list.
If Tiny Ricardo is deceased, what could he have done to be of interest?
Well, let's hope Martello and his company employees will tell me.
George, real good of you to come. I know how busy you are, I know.
Not at all, Marty. Pleased to be here.
Saul, I want you to meet one of the true legends of our profession. Saul, George Smiley. George, this is Saul Eklund.
Nice to know you. And meet my assistant, Cy Johansson. Cy, George Smiley.
Heard a lot about you, sir.
And you know Murphy here, I think, George.
Sure, we met on numerous occasions.
Yes, indeed. Numerous.
George, Saul Eklund is high in our Drug Enforcement Administration, formerly the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. George, our people in the company like to work very closely indeed with their good friends in narcotics.
Touch both ways.
It's parameters, Mr. Smiley, sir. On a deal like this, you get some areas, they overlap entirely.
Maybe we should get ourselves up to date on the latest details first. Murphy, go ahead.
The subject flew to Bangkok and was picked up at the airport by Tan Lee in his personal limousine. They proceeded directly to the Air Sea Permanent Suite of the Hotel Erawan. Tan is managing director of Asian Rice and General, Air Sea's Bangkok subsidiary.
Was Ko along?
No, sir. Ko took his manager, Chu, along with him.
Why the hell doesn't somebody bug that damned hotel suite, Sai?
Bangkok says the walls. They got no proper cavities or something.
Cavities, my ass.
Go on, Murphy.
Sir, the three men, that's Ko and Chu and Tan Lee, drove down to Bangkok port. And they looked at 20 or 30 small cement carriers tied up along the bank. Then they drove back to Bangkok airport, and Ko alone flew to Manila, Philippines.
Cement carriers, my ass. Those are boats who do the run up to Hong Kong, Murphy?
Yes, sir.
We know those boats. They carry the dope. We've been going for those boats for years.
Mr. Eklund, I take it you're particularly interested in Ko.
That's it, Mr. Smiley.
Yes, sir, that's it.
And what about Ricardo, deceased, Marty?
George, at our request, enforcement here took a second look at the background and record of Ricardo.
Seems Ricardo's alive after all. Seems like it was a prime error.
Happens to all of us, George. Even you, okay?
Yes, indeed.
Ricardo's death is in our files, is on and around August 21.
Correct.
However, on September 2nd, a couple of weeks after his death, right? It seems Ricardo made personal contact with one of the narcotics bureaus in the Asian Theater. Ricardo offered his services on a sell-and-tell basis regarding an opium mission he claimed to have received to fly right over the border into Red China.
Ricardo had made a good living when the war was on flying dope.
Now, he flew a lot of missions for the company in Laos, and when the war ended, the company resettled him and pulled up the ladder. So maybe at that, the gamekeeper Ricardo turned into the poacher Ricardo, if you follow me.
Well, not absolutely.
Long as the war was on, Ricardo carried dope for the company to keep the home fires burning up in the hill villages. War ended, he carried it for himself.
Thank you, Mr. Eklund. So, Ricardo offered an unnamed narcotics bureau opium on the one hand, information on the other, right?
Right, George. For payment, he wanted $50,000 in small notes and a West German passport for a one-time journey out. The bureau agreed on the sale of the opium.
You mean they bought it?
Sure. There's a fixed tariff for such deals.
And the West German passport out?
Well, that wasn't so straightforward. Saul, maybe you should handle this part.
The bureau asked Ricardo for some of his information, what we call taking it to first base. Ricardo comes up with the story he's been ordered to fly the dope over the border into Red China and bring back an unspecified load in payment. He said he embarked on his journey for Red China, chicken out, and hedge-hopped home over Laos. He said he knew who was behind the deal, the Mr. Big, and that if Mr. Big's people found him out, they'd kick his teeth right up his throat. He said he had the plane still, hidden, a beechcraft, and he offered to show this plane. That's all we have.
They bought the opium, George, but the information went nowhere. That was the human error, George. No further action was put on the case.
Where is Ricardo now, Marty? Do you know?
Not known, George.
Beechcraft. Is that a single-engine plane?
Twin engines, George. Kind of executive runabout kind of thing.
And where would the opium be carried? How much was that?
400 kilos in weight. In the cabin. Most likely unscrewed the spare seats.
Yes, I suppose they would have done. Thank you.
Well, what else is there, Saul?
What else is there? I'll tell you, Martello. We got a whole apparatus standing by, ready to shake out Ko's connection across the hemisphere. I know we've got a hands-off deal with the Brits on Hong Kong, but Ko is more than just Hong Kong. We got drugs on Ko, we got arms, we got the biggest damn load of red gold we ever saw Moscow hand to one man in our lives, and we've got the first proof ever, if this guy Ricardo's telling a correct story, of a Moscow-subsidized drug subversion program which is ready and willing to carry the battle into Red China in the hopes of doing the same for them as they're already doing for us.
Marty, oh my lord, you tell them of the gold scene.
Sure he told us. That's liaison, Mr. Smiley. Martello told us, though, to play it delicate. It's a British ball game, their territory, their Joe, their party.
Moses, for the first time ever, we have gotten ourselves a saber-toothed Soviet communist corrupter in our sights, pushing dope and screwing up the area, and taking Russian money, and we can prove it.
I doubt if you can, unless you can prove what the gold seems for. And, Marty, I'd like to remind you that we have your general declaration that you will abstain from operations in British areas unless we say you can. And we have a contract with you on this particular case. You will leave Co. to us. That is the contract.
I've said it. We're going. Come on, Sol.
Sure, Sol. And sure, you said it.
Okay, Sol, we heard you. Murphy, you go too.
Yes, sir.
Who else have your headquarters told, Marty? The Revenue Service, the Customs, the Mayor of Chicago, their 12 best friends?
We have politics same as you, George. And, George, suppose they nail Co. Suppose they get him out of the colony into Sing Sing on a 10 to 30 rap. Why, we can pick him clean at will.
I don't know if Drake Co. is all that important, Marty.
What the hell's that meant to mean? Okay, Saul knows Co's funds are from Moscow, knows he pushes opium, but that's all.
Does he know of the girl?
No, George, he doesn't know about Mrs. Worthington. She went with Co to Bangkok and she flew on with him to Manila.
I thought you may have. So, how long have we got out on our own? What's our head start before Saul and his narcotic squad come barging in?
3 months, George. 10 to 12 weeks. It's fluid. 3 months outside, I would say.
Yesterday, we had all the time in the world.
In part one of The Honorable Schoolboy, dramatized by Frederick Bradenham from the novel by John le Carré, George Smiley was played by Peter Vaughan and Jerry Westerby by Martin Jarvis. Peter Gwillem, John Rowe, Connie Sachs, Mary Wimbush, Doc DeSalis, Cyril Shapps, Craw and Drake Coe, Henry Stamper, Molly Meakin, Heather Barrett, Mr. Pelling and Mr. Tew, Roger Hume, Mrs. Pelling, Frieda Dowie, Sam Collins, Alexander John, Reverend Hibbert, Colin Douglas, Doris Hibbert, Shirley Stelfox, Roddy Martindale, Stephen Hancock, Saul Enderby, Ronald Baddeley, Oliver Lakin, Edward Cast, Martello, Paul Maxwell, Frost, Terry Malloy, Mr. Wilbraham, Christopher Banks, and Miss Green, Patricia Gibson. The theme was composed by Stephen Hancock. The play was directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine. Martin Jarvis is a National Theatre player.